The Green Room with Orla Barry on News Talk.
What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt? Let me ask you this. What about the fact they came charging, that they came charging with clubs in their hands, swinging clubs? Do they have any problem? I think they do. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that was a horrible, horrible day. Wait a minute. I'm not finished, fake news. That was a horrible day. I will tell you something. I watched those very closely, much more closely than you people watched it. And you have you had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that.
That was President Donald Trump speaking after the Charlottesville rally in the U.S. last year, where one woman was killed by an alt-right supporter. Well, these past couple of weeks again have brought increased focus on alt-right followers in the US. There's most notably, I guess, the actions of Cesar Sayoc, the man accused of sending a series of pipe bombs to Democrats and notable critics of President Trump's. Well, filmmaker Adam Bala Lowe has been following the alt-right movement for some time, alongside the counter-protest movement, Antifa, the anti-fascist movement. His new film is entitled Alt-Right Age of Rage. Here's the trailer.
A gentleman by the name of Richard Spencer. He's basically known as a right-wing propagandist, and he's always had these hate politics coming along with him.
Have you ever met Antifa? What are they like?
Daryl Lamont Jenkins is a black activist whose job it is to try to silence people like me.
There is no doubt that the alt-right has been attractive to angst-ridden young men. Frustrated and ambitious young men change the world.
The author of the Charleston Massacre was radicalized and ultimately committed mass murder based solely on what he read on the internet.
I certainly did not want it to happen, but I'm not going to play into their game denouncing the movement.
Hate speech is protected under the First Amendment, but if what you say does cause some sort of harm, people are allowed to respond.
We all got to step up. We cannot ignore what's out there. We got to fight back.
They are doing it for us. It's not me convincing people through rational argumentation.
As far as I'm concerned, you pick this fight, now fight.
My policy is never back down.
The ideology is a prescription for mass murder.
Director Adam Bala Lowe joins me now, and welcome to you, Adam. And I was thinking, you know, you've probably almost heard this line before, that it's a pertinent time to talk to you and talk about the film. However, I suspect that it's probably felt like pertinent time ever since the film was completed. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I mean, it's felt like pertinent, you know, ever since we began the film, because we started researching the film a few months before the election.
A few months before the election, so even before the inauguration, etc. So your aim in making the film and talking to both sides, and I guess the opposite side, the anti-fascist movement, Antifa, is probably we're almost only aware of the word Antifa in the past, I'd say 18 months to 2 years. What did you set out to do with the movie?
Well, the movie was really, I set out to make this movie for a couple of reasons. I mean, firstly, I had started to hear about the alt-right movement. I had done a film called The New Radical, which was about a young man named Cody Wilson who invented the first 3D printed gun. And as we were filming that documentary, he started talking to me about the alt-right, which was very early on. And I'd never heard of this movement. And he said, you should look into it because it's really interesting. So I started to look into it. And at first, you know, the idea behind the alt-right, at least within the media, was that it was sort of just an alternative to the right wing. But as I started to research, I discovered it was far more nefarious and it had far more to deal with white identity and in some aspects, white supremacy and sort of a rebranding of the neo-Nazi movement. So at that point, that's when I began moving into pre-production of the film. And then at the same time, Trump won the election, which really set the country into turmoil. And I can't even begin to express to you how traumatic it was in Los Angeles, where I live. People were just beside themselves for months afterwards. And I felt like I have to do this film to get an understanding of what's going on in my country.
And just go back to that point about the alt-right, I guess in some ways, were they positioning themselves as kind of right of the right, or was that how people initially interpreted what they represent?
Well, initially, the alt-right was positioning itself as especially to a younger audience, an internet-based audience, as a group that rejects the left wholeheartedly and all the policies of the left, but also doesn't fit in with the stuffy, banal right-wing conservative party. So people thought at first it was, you know, just sort of an alternative to the right wing. And there was even, you know, certain figures within the alt-right who were gay, like Milo Yiannopoulos, who were Jewish. But as it went on, we started to realize, you know, in the words of Andrew Anglin, who was a big, you know, leader in the alt-right, the goal of the alt-right was to, quote, ethnically cleanse white nations of non-whites and establish an authoritarian government.
Were there any African-American members?
No. I mean, other than extremely confused people.
and there are some of them in the world. But however, why did they agree then to be filmed? Because in a way, you could expose a lot of that in your film.
Well, it was really right place, right time. You know, we started approaching the members of the alt-right right after the election. And they were feeling incredibly emboldened. They were all over the news. They were getting tons of media requests. And honestly, 9 out of 10 of them were just super interested in talking to us and expressing their point of view, because suddenly their point of view, suddenly they didn't have to hide it anymore. Trump sort of gave them license to come out of the shadows and start talking about stuff like white nationalism that during the 8 years of Obama, you just could not speak about in public. So they were really happy to talk to us. It was also right place, right time. What was interesting is that Antifa, I had a very difficult time finding anyone to talk on camera. And finally, I was only able to get people who had been doxed, you know, whose identities had been revealed to talk on camera.
And why was that?
Well, Antifa, first of all, they don't want to reveal their identity because they feel that they're directly at threat by the police, by authority figures in the U.S. And there is some evidence to that. There is definitely some evidence that Antifa is being surveilled by FBI and there were some rumors at some point that Trump was going to try to label Antifa as a terrorist organization, but that never ended up happening. But for that reason, they are very paranoid about revealing their identity. They're also just not trusting of the media, which is I feel like sadly is a characteristic of. On both sides of extremism in America and within these particular subcultures, if you will.
It's interesting because with my other hat, I do work with a news show on the BBC, and we have heard from Richard Spencer a number of times and from some outright people. We have never heard from Antifa. They've always refused to take part in discussion. So it does indicate that it's not just you who's getting the cold shoulder. But you did manage to speak to some members, as you say, in the end, who had been kind of identified and who were out there. I mentioned the Charlottesville rally and President Trump's comments, the Unite the Right rally, as it was called at the time. Your film crew was there. Did ye expect violence at the rally?
Yeah, we fully expected violence. Daryl Lamont Jenkins, who's the sort of lead anti-fascist within the film. He's kind of the heart and soul of the film in many ways. Mm. We were filming with him at a white pride conference in Tennessee a month before Charlottesville, and he was there protesting it out front. And during that conference, Richard Spencer stood up and he told the crowd that there was a rally planned in Charlottesville, a Unite the Right rally, and that he insinuated that it would be violent. Hmm. And Daryl also told us it's going to be violent. Like, he knew the people who were going to show up. He was reading the chatter on these encrypted servers, on these encrypted chat rooms, because he's been able to infiltrate them. So he saw the talk of, you know, weapons being brought and, you know, bashing the skulls of anti-fascists. And at the same time, he knew that there were going to be anti-fascist groups there who were also engaged in violence. There were going to be anti-fascist groups there who were pro-Second Amendment, that carried guns, like Redneck Revolt. Hmm. And there was a possibility, a distinct possibility of violence. So he told us that we had to be there, even though we had almost finished shooting the film and I was editing it and getting ready to deliver it to the film festivals. We sent a crew at the last second because he told us there could be violence.
And how much did it change the film then for you, Adam?
Oh, it changed the film completely. In fact, that Monday when we all returned back to the production office, everyone was just speechless. Nobody knew what to do. There was even a little bit of fear of whether we should just scrap the film entirely because it was just so frightening what was going on. And we were afraid of how anyone would even perceive the film at all. Like, could we even talk about this subject now? Like, somebody has just died. Mm-hmm. But as things calmed down, we realized that we needed to put this film out. And what we did was we changed the entire third act and made the entire third act about Charlottesville and then about the months after Charlottesville and what had changed in the country and what had changed within the alt-right.
And those comments that we heard from President Trump afterwards, and we heard a clip of it at the start here, condemning the violent actors on many sides and on both sides. How did the alt-right react to that? Did they feel they had President Trump on their side after Charlottesville?
Oh, they absolutely felt that they had him on their side. In fact, they all cheered his remarks. Even David Duke went on Twitter and said, look, see, we won.
And for you, was there part of you at all through this, Adam, and particularly in that last segment, as you say, you changed the third of the film, that worried that maybe, you know, not that you're glamorising the alt-right, but that maybe in a sense you're giving them more of a platform, that you might be normalising what they believe in, that some might watch it and think, I kind of agree with these guys, I might join up. Was there any sense of trepidation on your behalf about that?
There was definitely some talk within the production team, you know, as I don't make these movies alone or in a vacuum, but I was always the voice that was speaking out that it's important that this stuff is in the film. You know, my philosophy is always that sunlight is the best disinfectant. And I feel like sticking our heads in the sand and pretending that this isn't happening is is not only foolish, it's dangerous. I feel like these views, they need to be outed. We need to know exactly what these people are thinking. That said, we need a counter argument to it. And I believe that we presented a very strong counter argument within the film. And if it were just 100% on the alt-right, you know, speaking freely and not, you know, being put in check by a counter viewpoint, then in that case, I could see the argument that it would be, you know, dangerous or an advocate tool for the alt-right.
Do you stay in touch? Have you maintained contact with them, with members of the alt-right?
No, not at all. You know, the thing is that throughout the process of making the film, at first we were in touch, and I was able to communicate with these guys whenever I needed to, you know, via text, via email. After Charlottesville, it all changed. Essentially, the party line was, do not speak to the media anymore. And they stopped talking to everyone. There was no more communication because they understood that they needed to sort of go back into hiding. So there was no more communication with me after Charlottesville, with the exception of the one interview I was able to get with Richard Spencer, which was the final interview a couple months after Charlottesville. Whereas before, right before, you know, right after the election, it was very different. They were all about talking to the media. So it was very easy for me to communicate with these guys. Not so after Charlottesville.
Has he seen the film, Richard Spencer?
I have no idea if any of these guys have seen the film. After South by Southwest, when we sort of had a flood of publicity, that's where the film had its world premiere, was South by Southwest Film Festival in March. Yeah. I actually got an email from Miley Yiannopoulos, and he asked me to send him a link of the film. I did not. But other than that, I don't know if anyone has seen the film. Although we released the film in the U.S., we released the film on iTunes and VOD yesterday. And within the first 12 hours of the film being released, the iTunes page was flooded with negative reviews from all alt-right members. So completely trolled, like one-star reviews. Every single one said it's liberal propaganda, it's funded by George Soros, like just crazy stuff.
Many Russian bots involved.
and I'm still waiting for my check from George Soros, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. I'm sure, yeah. Very good. Well, it is now available to us on this side of the Atlantic as well via iTunes and Amazon. So that's where you can check it out. It's entitled Alt-Right Age of Rage. Director Adam Bolla-Lowe, great to talk to you. And thanks so much for joining us here on the show.
Thanks for having me.
News Talk 106 to 108.